You should be warned, the upcoming episode will be full of unfiltered, off-the-cuff discussion. As such, you should consider this your spoiler warning.
Hello, my name is Kyle.
My name is Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
We're not the only podcast with two white dudes talking about bullshit that doesn't matter. But we're not the worst. Dude, I practiced that all day today.
I know, it feels like it.
I was practicing
good.
A lot.
I'm proud.
Well, hey, everybody. So this is a very special episode. We've got a guest, and guest episodes are always really cool. We're joined by my good friend Alex, who has joined us all the way from Chicago. He drove down here just for this stupid show, which, you know, it's not to see parents on Thanksgiving or anything. No.
Okay. I decided to take a week off.
Just to
come down here, and I took a Greyhound bus, which, by the way, hashtag shitty, the worst trip I've ever had in my life.
Is it your first time on a Greyhound?
It is.
Really?
They told me not shibby. No. They promised free Wi-Fi. No Wi-Fi at all.
What?
Can you believe that?
Dude. I'm surprised they offer Wi-Fi or even say they offer it.
How much was the ticket, though?
$33.
$33?
Yeah.
That's not bad, man.
It's not bad.
Yeah. That's really not bad.
It's not too shabby.
No. Thanks, but it's not shibby.
Thank you, Ryan.
Oh, Alex, man, I'm glad to see you. I haven't seen you in like 3 years, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. It's been a real long while.
So it's good to see you, buddy. I think we're going to get into what you've been up to on the next episode.
Whoa.
But before that.
Wow, everybody. There was a collective gasp. Yeah. Everybody was so excited for a second.
Totally spoiled that
yeah.
one. Yeah. But before we get into it. You know, when I asked you to be on the show to talk about that, you also requested you wanted to come on and talk about a movie or a game or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the movies you threw out was Big Fish, which is a movie I know personally. It wasn't in my top five, but I definitely put it in my top 10. I'd maybe list it around 9 or 8.
Okay.
That's fucking high.
It's one that I've still really enjoyed.
That's really high.
I'm going to shit all over this movie. I'm not ready for it.
Well, that's fine. Ryan shits all over everything.
I shit on a lot of things.
We're going to have this discussion. We're going to have to grind through it.
But before we do, I mean, I don't know. I had the story idea, but it didn't work out because Ryan, I guess, has never been fishing in his life.
Yeah, that's about right.
So, we could still tell a fishing story, and Ryan cannot tell anything.
I can sit here. Yeah, that's fine.
He could tell us what his favorite fish to eat is.
Ryan could, yeah. And nobody will care.
Do you eat a lot of fish?
Grouper.
Grouper, really?
No, I don't know. That's just the first fish that came to mind.
I'm thinking more as a tuna or a snapper.
Oh, I don't. Not tuna. No.
Not even swordfish?
Tuna and sushi is okay. Yeah. I don't like other kinds of tuna, and especially not tuna fish where it's like all mixed up with the mayonnaise and shit. Nah.
Tuna salad?
I don't know. Mahi mahi, there you go. Mahi mahi is pretty good.
All right, man, that's groundbreaking stuff.
The grilled chicken of the fish world, mahi mahi.
That's as adventurous as I get with fish.
Can I
we
just say
we did eat whale though?
If whale
was pretty good.
If I cough, I'm going to lean back and try to cough away from the mic.
Fair enough.
Please bear with me. I'm very sorry.
We will just lice all that. Alex came down here sick. He's going to fuck everything all up. Total dickhole. I don't know. It kind of sucks now. I guess my fishing story. I just remember going fishing with my dad at like 5, and he took me out on the boat. And I remember I caught a fish, and I didn't know what to do. And so I like had the pole, and I was reaching also for the line, and I just fell right over the boat. And then I remember crying because I lost my fishing pole. And of course, I was 5, so it was the most tragic thing. I remember my dad picked me up out of the water with like one hand because. He's a massive beast of a man, and I was, again, only 5. But then I sat on the boat cold. I remember riding back to shore with the wind and it just being the coldest fucking thing ever.
It sounds pretty miserable.
It was. That's what I equate most fishing with.
So not a good story.
No.
Okay.
I didn't say it was good.
So I don't feel so bad for not having a fishing story.
Any other time I've been fishing, too, like even with when I've gone with like some of my male friends, I'm always the one that has to bait the hook because everybody is a giant vagina and doesn't want to touch a worm.
Yeah, vaginas hate worms. That's a fact. Fun fact.
I always give Andy Eggleston a lot of shit because he's a giant comic book tough guy and he won't touch a worm. I was like, man, you think fucking Wolverine would care about touching a half-cut worm? He's like, no, but I ain't fucking Wolverine.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
He brings up a really good point, though.
I just... Please, let's go through your friends and keep throwing them all under buses. This guy's a shithole for whatever, and Andy Eagleson's a giant puss.
Yeah.
That's not Wolverine. Who else is this shitbag?
Can we actually talk about Wolverine for a second?
Yeah.
Such a hard-on for the new Logan trailer.
It's a Johnny Cash song. Like, you put that in anything, and, like, I'm in.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that movie to come out.
I like 5 o'clock shadow Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And I just had to say it. I felt like this would be a good place.
They're definitely going to kill him off for sure.
I like that they've gone with like, hey, fuck the timeline. Let's just make a movie.
Is this the end? Is this the end of the universe?
I think
it's definitely Jackman's last Wolverine portrayal, I believe.
It is. I think they're going to kill off one, Professor Xavier. They're going to kill off Wolverine because it's Old Man Logan's story, right?
Yeah.
And it is pretty much the end of things, and then it's not because the new X-23, Laura, I don't know, what's her name? It's X-23, right?
Yeah, it is X-23, who's the clone of
Logan. Uh-huh.
And becomes like his
I wonder if Dakin's going to be in there, his bastard son.
God damn. I am not nerdy enough. I should not have asked that question.
Well,
I apologize. I was just really looking forward to like Rebecca Romijn Stamos coming back and reprising some shit. No, I don't know. No, I'm saying that would have been great.
I don't think Rebecca's
involved
anymore. But
you know so much more.
It's all Jennifer Lawrence.
That's what's wrong with these new movies. There's just no naked Mystique scenes. Like, Bryan Singer found a way to sneak that into, like, every movie. It's like, oh, here's Rebecca Romijn.
Well, and they've also, like, they've shifted once they got J-Law. They're like, oh, yeah, this movie's all based around Mystique now.
Yeah.
And then
she's the leader of the X-Men.
Here's the supporting cast of all the other X-Men. When has that ever been a
thing? Who's ever blue?
Yeah.
Who's ever blue?
She doesn't like to wear the makeup. Britches. And exactly, she's like, well, I'm J-Law. Why are you not showing off my J-Law face?
Just, all right, well, if we're just going to be tangenting anyway, have you guys seen, like, the new X-Men Apocalypse?
I have not. I did not want to see it. I heard nothing
It's a
but.
Garbage fire.
So, wait, here's my...
You should see it. It's horrible.
All right, X-Men Apocalypse, better or worse than BVS?
Better, because at least there's fun moments.
Man. All right. Well, then
like
I guess.
Batman versus Superman.
Never seen it. Superman.
I liked it. Everybody else hated it. But
I would say on first watching, I think Batman v Superman is a better movie. That said, I can never watch it again because it is so dour. Whereas like X-Men Apocalypse is like Troll 2 kind of bad. And it's just like, how to get this fucking bad?
Okay,
like,
then I'm going to see it.
Where'd they go with this? Okay. They have shots where like big bad Apocalypse is in the background just designing costumes. Like, superimposing figures, just like a background character designing costumes for the Four Horsemen. Yeah, it's absurd.
Okay, I love it. You got me hooked now.
Sand powers.
So, Alex, what about you, man? Fishing.
Yes.
Let's ring this back in.
First off, I apologize. I wasn't trying to tangent it up.
Hey, tangents happen.
I just had to ask.
Yeah.
Second, fishing story. I'm kind of torn because I have some pretty great fishing stories because I love fishing.
Oh, cool.
I think my biggest letdown as fishing when I was a child my dad and stepmom that I don't talk about decided to go into the woods and found like this pond, right? I had this little Snoopy fishing pole.
Did you have the bobber too?
I did.
Man, I fucking love that bobber.
And I got the biggest fish I've ever caught in my life. And I was able to bring it to shore and all that kind of stuff. And I'm holding the pole there, and my dad reaches down to grab it, and the hook slips.
Oh, no.
And this massive fish goes back. It was a catfish. Slithers back into the water. And my dad looks at, you know how it is when you mess up something but you don't realize it? Or if you mess up something with a kid, you don't realize it? That you automatically blame them. So he gives me this look like, what the fuck did you just do? And that's why the fish got away. And I was heartbroken. I was crying and all that. But fuck that fish.
Man, I used to have that exact same Snoopy bobber, and that thing was awesome.
It was a good.
He'd lay on his back on the water like he was laying on the on his doghouse.
Yeah.
That was so fucking cool. I love that thing. I've looked for it a couple times on the internet.
Why?
Yeah. If you hate fishing, why would you?
It's a good childhood.
Why would, Kyle? Why would, as child,
you do this?
Do you like baths?
Not as much as showers.
Okay. Well, that might be a reason. I was trying to help you and find a reason
for the bobber?
For you to get a bobber.
I could just put it in my current fish tank, though, and just have it hanging out.
With no hook, I hope.
No,
right.
No.
Okay.
No. He'd just be hanging out, relaxing. All cool. That was a
shooting
fresh
some
prince.
B-ball outside of school.
There we go. Thank you. Yeah. Thank
poor
you.
Fish.
All right, so let's shut the fuck up and get into this talk now. Before we do, we're going to have a bumper. The beautiful thing about Tim Burton movies is a safe bet the music's going to be done by Danny Elfman, who was one of the most famous composers outside of maybe John Williams.
Howard
Shore? Yeah. It's like there's maybe, yeah. There's some in that league.
Exactly. I said. Yeah. And then who's the guy that did Inception?
Howard's or Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer. He's blown up lately, too. He's pretty much everywhere. So, here's a sample of a Danny Elfman cut from the movie Big Fish. So that was, of course, a piece of music from the great Danny Elfman. I think our guest Alex here picked that piece out, and it's Danny Elfman. I mean, what else do you need to say?
He's always like the best parts of any movie. Usually.
Yeah. Well, and what I like about him as a composer is that he's unique. You know when you're listening to Danny Elfman, is hard for any composer, I think, to stand out, but to have a unique voice in composition. That's something pretty awesome. So
The Spider-Man 2 soundtrack by Danny Elfman. Like, I just love Danny Elfman in general. Like, his music is like one you can listen to and know the exact mood and pacing of the movie, and just like you don't even have to watch the movie and then you get it. It's very theatrical. Whereas like, you know, Hans Zimmer and some of the other ones is like, listen to the Inception soundtrack.
Yeah,
and it's just dark tones, especially like the Dark Knight series. It's just
a lot of it too is like that. The things with like somebody like Hans Zimmer is that it tends to get a little inside of itself, maybe, because you know, the Inception soundtrack is all based around like a 5-note thing that's either going faster or incredibly slow. And
it's brilliant,
yeah,
but
exactly.
Is it fun to listen to? It's
totally, yeah,
debatable.
Exactly. Danny Elfman, always
fun. Agreed.
So, all right,
agreed.
So let's get into this movie, Big Fish.
Big Fish and Little China.
Yeah,
Big Fish and Little China. Oh my God, I'm fucking up.
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell's.
Yeah.
Russell Fest, baby.
Yeah.
And Kim Cattrall.
Mm-hmm.
In case.
Oh yeah, this is the chick from Sex and the City.
Yeah.
The old whore.
The old whore.
That's what she is. Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know. Watch that sitcom, The Old Whore.
You have if you've watched
any Showtime.
Any
though.
Sitcom.
The Old Whore.
So, all right, so this movie, Alex, as our guest, why don't you give us a quick, briefish rundown of the premise of this film?
Shit.
We'll put you on spot. See how your improvisational skills are. Quick thinking.
Big Fish, set in modern-day America. A father and son learn to grow back together through the dad's tall tales. Along the journeys, we are introduced to characters that could be made up or could be real, but it's the journey and the story of the father's life, and at the end, the son has to make the decision if he loves his dad as he is or how he wants him to be. Big Fish.
It's very professionally done.
You like that?
Very well done, man.
It really puts us to shame.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
We ramble.
No,
I love the fact, you know, the movie has a big fish in the thing, but, you know, it's always about telling the whopper, and you know, when people go fishing, you know, they always say, well, the fish was this big, and then as they retell the story, it gets bigger and bigger, and that's, I think, I love the title of the movie because of that, like, the dad's stories are always getting so grandiose and bigger as with each retelling, and it's, I don't know, the thing I love about this movie is that it's a movie with one main story intercut with all these little vignettes.
Yes.
Which really help break up the pace, but also tell more stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to let Ryan start talking now.
Oh, no. All right. So you are all worried about how I feel about this film.
Mm-hmm. I'm not at all.
I feel like I've slipped before on this podcast about my feelings on this film. So I think that's why Kyle's not worried. I don't like Tim Burton. I really think he's a very good visual storyteller. but usually his stories and performances are cheesy, not good, underwritten, all in service of style over substance, almost always. Big Fish and Ed Wood are the exceptions. I love Big Fish.
Yeah.
It is one of his most moving films. Fuck Edward Scissorhands and like the other ones that people get on hard-ons about. Like, it's just so poignant. And there's a line very early on in the movie which kind of like sums up like everything. It's almost like Cats in the Cradle, where the son played by Billy Crudup says, "We are strangers, but we knew everything about each other. We knew everything about each other." And just that distance and disconnect. And then this whole movie builds to kind of a resolution where they resolve their issues. It's very poignant, very meaningful, very touching. I cry like a baby every time I get to the ending. So no, I have not much to say bad. There are some nitpicks here and there, and I think it's largely because of Tim Burton being Tim Burton.
I think I know what you will get to on that and section.
Probably will, but this is his, I'd say, one of his most successful films.
I think this is Tim Burton's best film, easily. Where the hell?
Edward, it depends on the day, but exactly. Edward's up there.
But where the hell is this the rest of the time, Tim Burton? Why are you so cheesy and schlocky and what the fuck, man, when you can do this? This is my big complaint that I had when we watched, Punch Drunk. What the fuck, Adam Sandler? Where the hell has this been the rest of your career? What are you doing? Like,
well, he's getting a paycheck now without much work.
Yeah, I guess
that's
so.
What it is.
I think my thing is when watching this movie, the first time that I saw Big Fish, I did not realize it was Tim Burton. And I think that's good because I would not have watched it because I am not a fan.
Okay, that's Tim Burton at all. I was gonna ask.
I'm not even Ed Wood. I think Ed Wood
is an acquired taste.
It is.
Thing.
I'll watch it, and I watched it when I was younger, so I probably should give it another chance. That being said, I think that Michael Keaton was the best Batman from the Batman trilogy, or from the Batman movies, all of the ones that were done.
I'm a Val Kilmer guy myself, but it's the most controversial decision outside of somebody saying they like George Clooney.
I've never heard anybody say Val Kilmer is the best Bruce Wayne. Val Kilmer is a good Batman. They are horrible in the other roles.
Fair enough.
I just the movie it has so many levels. Yeah. And I don't know if I can go into what I hate. I had to watch it really closely because I hadn't watched it in about 5-6 years.
What, Big Fish?
Big Fish.
Okay.
And watching it last night, I had to watch back, and there is a distinct time in the movie that I feel like it drags, and it gets boring as fuck.
Okay.
What time?
And in the third act when you see Helena Bomb Carter.
When he goes to visit her in real life?
In real life.
Yeah.
And then she tells the story
of his dad.
I think that, first off, not a fan of her, because Tim Burton seems to fucking shoehorn her every single movie.
Well, I mean, she was
his
wife at
the
time.
You are saying all of the things I want to
say. I get it.
So on the
I get it.
Yeah.
But
fuck her.
But,
right?
But my thing is,
she's the worst.
But I just so having her in the movie was garbage, I think, in a small role. In a small role, the witch would have made sense. I think to have her play the little girl made no sense. But that's just me. But watching it over and over, watching it again last night, that scene is better than I remembered it when I first saw it.
That's my point. And I'm also not the biggest fan of Helena Bonham Carter, especially in a Tim Burton film, because he shoehorned her. And my problem with her, especially in Tim Burton, is I don't know if he doesn't know how to tell her how to act, but she overacts in everything.
Yeah,
and I feel
she plays to the cheap seats.
She's really doing a nicer job in this movie. She's not a caricature of somebody. She is actually playing a role, and she's doing it well. And it's nicer to see than a lot of the other times where she's just, again, like Ryan just said, playing to the cheap seats, just fucking hamming it up to the nines.
Yeah.
So that was my one note on Helena. I really enjoyed that part.
I agree. And I disagree.
Okay.
Because everything you're saying about her, I feel, is so dead on. And in this movie, she is subtle. She is nuanced. Yeah. And, like, you can see in her eyes, like, the emotion and depth and pathos that isn't there in any of her other performances. I would even argue isn't there in Marion Cotillard's performance. Like, she's completely wasted. Whereas like Helena Bonham Carter, like I believe that character. Like
this
she
was Marion Cotillard's first American film, by the way.
Yeah, and she's the biggest. Everybody loves her. She's huge right now. She's, she. You can't go wrong. I think the scene that they're talking about that shows Helena Bonham Carter's depth in this movie is the scene after he's done fixing the whole house and all that kind of stuff, and he goes. And he drops the hat on the hook, and he goes to take it off, and she goes, "You can leave it." Mm-hmm. And the when he says the way he reacts, and you and McGregor, I mean, when you're with a monster star like that, you have to really play well, you know. Unlike Star Wars actor that got forgotten,
Hayden Christensen. Thank you. We shall not let the name die.
Thank you.
Never forget. It's like September 11th.
When she leans in to kiss him and he said no.
Yeah.
And that look on her face, she's just like, oh my, like she thought it was there. And all of, we're talking about all the stories. Can we talk about Albert Finney?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, the dude's fucking 80. And he is, I love Albert Finney.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ewan McGregor and Albert Finney are both brilliant. There's a disconnect. I don't buy that they look alike at all. Like it doesn't. And like they've shown like pictures of young Albert Finney and Ewan McGregor, and they do look alike there.
Exactly.
And that's but Albert Finney as an old man, like I do not buy as Ewan McGregor, as opposed to like Alison Lohman and Jessica Lange, who are mirror image. Like geez, that's it crazy. Could be like but they went the back thing. In time.
I am so glad that Ewan McGregor is in this movie because he's such a fucking joy. Nails oh my god!
Yeah. It's
like every aspect and. Compared to Helena, like, you know, Ewan McGregor a lot of times is kind of hamming it up, but it's in such a way that it's not cheap. Like, it's so goddamn charming the entire time.
It's whimsical.
Yes.
It's not over dramatic or anything. It's just whimsical. And there's nothing wrong with whimsy in a movie.
He's so easy to love, is my note. And the other one, like, as a fucking Scottish dude, man, he's got that southern drawl, like, fucking on point. It's just... He's right there. Like, you wouldn't know that the dude was from Scotland if you had never seen, like, Trainspotting or something else. You know?
Watch that.
Damn, dog. You never seen Trainspotting?
I've watched bits and pieces of it. I can't do it all the way through. God.
Ah. So you're not excited for Trainspotting 2 then?
Or are they making another one?
Oh, yeah.
It's called T2.
Is it called T2?
T2.
It's not Judgment Terminator Day? 2. I know, right?
Do they have a bunch of babies? Is it like, are they in a nurse? Are they in an orphanage now doing drugs? Like, because that sounds fun.
I think almost everybody from the original is back, which is really. And it's Danny Boyle, who is fantastic. And I'm
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog, he did 28 Days Later.
Oh, my favorite actor comes from 28 Days Later. I appreciate you saying that.
Which is that? Is that Killian?
No.
I thought it was Cillian. Is it Killian Murphy?
I've heard it pronounced Killian Murphy, so that's what I'm going off of. Who's the actor? Is it the guy in The Guard in Bruges? Is it that old guy?
Brendan Gleeson.
Thank you. I couldn't think of his name. Yeah.
Ooh. Phenomenal actor.
And he's really great in that, too.
The only thing that would have made Big Fish better is if Brendan Gleeson was in it. I'll say that.
I think Brendan Gleeson could have been old man Ewan McGregor. I mean, Finney's great. Don't get me wrong. Brendan Gleeson could have pulled it off, too.
I really like the way Finney talks, like, through this whole movie. It's kind of mush-mouthy.
It is.
I'm not super familiar with a lot of his other stuff. Is that just for this movie, or is that just how he is?
I don't really know a bunch of his earlier work when he was younger, but everything I've seen him in as an older man, he sounds about that.
Was he the sheriff in Super Troopers?
That's Brian Cox.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But Stryker.
Yeah, back to Wolverine. Yep.
Okay. Fair enough. I hope you see my confusion there, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and people confuse those two all the time.
Okay. Yeah. So a big bunch of my notes are on Ewan McGregor. He's so, like, every time he's on screen.
I know.
Yeah, I'll totally suck Ewan's junk.
But will you play with his butthole?
Course, man. Okay. I mean, as a gentleman, you have to.
I guess so. It's only right.
As a gentleman, you bring a friend.
Yeah.
So but I'm free for the rest of the week.
I don't, like, I'm busy. You guys go ahead.
I love that this movie runs you through so many different emotional levels, too.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into it. There was a couple of points in this movie where I had some tears flowing. I got a little weepy. The first time, I think, is when he's at the college and he has all the daffodils when she opens the door, man. That's just such a sweet, kind moment.
I didn't tear up. I get that. I get why that's a beautiful scene, being someone that's in a relationship. But for me, I mean, I like the scene. I didn't get any heart, like, emotions from it.
No, yeah. That's how I feel.
I don't know. Just when she opens that door and it's that field of yellow, and he's just standing right in the middle of it, like, and I love, he's like, I called every flower dealer in the next five states. It's the only way I told him I could get my wife to marry me.
It's romantic AF, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stats abbreviation for as fuck.
I don't know, it's just...
That's fuck. What?
What? Hey, wait a second.
There's so much wonder and amazement in this movie, even the macabre stuff. Like, when it gets more into, like, the circus, and it gets down into, like, you know, when Danny DeVito as a werewolf, spoiler, is attacking him.
I completely forgot about that, by the way. Like, I forgot Danny was a werewolf in this movie. Like, I remember him. I remember all of the scenes. I completely forgot that trailer scene.
And that part, and at the end of the day, he just wanted to play fetch with him, which, I mean, it's dumb and silly.
I forgot Deep Roy was such a horseshit shot. Did you see? He's like literally 3 feet from the werewolf, and he shoots Ewan McGregor.
I forgot Deep Roy was even fucking in this movie. I don't.
Deep Roy's in everything Tim Burton does. Well, if it's a Tim Burton movie, Deep Roy's showing up.
I didn't really notice that until like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, because I mean he's the main Oompa Loompa and he's everywhere there.
The main one.
Well, he's the only one.
Okay. Right?
Yes. Well, that's what I'm saying. But
it's
like,
a strange word to use.
Yeah. It was just crazy weird because I was like, oh, shit, that's Deep Roy. Mm-hmm. And it's weird going back and watching older Tim Burtons and seeing that dude totally show up. What's also weird, he's shorter than Danny DeVito, which is fucking crazy because Danny DeVito is ridiculously short. I think he's like 4'8".
Yeah. Also, you get more Danny DeVito butt.
Of course, yeah. I mean... Every time I see him naked, I'm reminded of a
the couch scene, right?
Well, just not only I'm reminded of a scene from Always Sunny where they do the Nightman Cometh scene, and he's asking if he can be naked because he says, I did theater in the 70s and everybody was naked all the time. It was like a giant orgy, and it's like, wait, Danny DeVito is naked all the time in these movies. Like
that's
he's
really
always naked.
That's the method. Only issue with Batman Returns is the Penguin is not naked enough.
But he's in that skin-colored fucking wet suit at the end. You can see butt, like, for the most part. It's there.
I did not pay close attention enough to that, so maybe I'll have to go back.
I would like to see Danny DeVito in the Catwoman suit.
Kitty got claws.
That's right. Kitty does got claws. How weird is it when Batman takes off the mask in Batman 2, and all of a sudden he doesn't have the black circles around his eyes? What the fuck's up with that?
To movie magic?
Yeah, I know. It's total bullshit.
I don't know.
Also, how would you not know that Christian Bale is Batman? Because you can see that giant mole when he has the mask on and off. Holy shit. Oh, Bruce Wayne's Batman because they both have that weird fucking mole right next to their eyeball.
Well, I mean, alright. All right.
This is a news
bulletin. If you
want to
get into like...
If I've ever seen one.
There are so many plot holes in the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah,
like people don't talk about. But you could argue... In the heat of the moment, when your adrenaline's going, you don't pay attention to the small details.
Fair enough. Yeah. Sure. Whatever.
I'm totally.
When there's a stressful situation, you don't always get all the details.
Also, he fights in the night. He's not fighting in direct sunlight.
Okay, there you go.
So we'll give.
I thought you were going
Nightman.
Something. Yeah, he is
Nightman.
Nightman.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Like, what else?
I want to get that boy's soul.
So here's a question I had in the movie, and I've always. Kind of thought it, and I want your guys' opinion.
Okay.
Is Spectre heaven?
No.
No, it's not.
No? You don't think
why would he have to save heaven?
Yeah.
Well, why is it so mystical and mythical when he goes there the first time?
Well, he's talking about the story in retrospect because at that point he had already saved the town, so he has like such a big place in his heart for it that he talks about it in high regard.
How do they have him in the book as showing up early and then he shows up again too late? Well, I always kind of thought that was like a heaven metaphor. Maybe I'm just making it too ham-fisted.
He talks about how that you witness things differently in different parts of your life. You know, so if you were to go to your high school right now, you would experience it a dick ton different than when you were a freshman. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, yeah.
You know? And with your court order, you probably shouldn't go to your high school. That being said. Yeah. But I think that's the thing is that we see places like Bloomington looks completely different from a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you
know?
For sure. There's
Martinsville looks completely
shit
different.
Ton of
you know?
Apartments around here.
But, I mean, it's. But there's still that nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, do I still want to go to the Bishop and have a beer? Do I still want to, you know, have Trojan Horses tacos? Mm. Of course. Fish tacos.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Quite literally, again, most of these stories have been twisted. Like, so what somebody says in Albert Finney's stories isn't exactly what was said. So in retrospect, you think back like, oh, I got there too early because I wasn't ready in my life to settle down at that exact time. But when I came back, I was too late because the town had been shambled and I missed out on this opportunity. It's not necessarily very literal, like a heaven kind of thing.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you go back to the town the second time. Remember, she's not serving peach pie or peach cobbler.
They've
she's
got
serving
the shitty donuts.
Fucking glazed donuts.
Yeah.
Like that.
And she has a fat suit on, right?
Yeah, she's got like a shitty plastic.
I don't know her name,
cups.
But I love her.
Missy Pyle.
Yeah. She's
I think she's fantastic.
She's that great, like...
She's a good
weird,
character
cute.
Actress.
Yes. Exactly, yeah. Like, she looks odd, and she stands out because of it. But it's not like an ugly odd. It's like, I like that face.
Well, she was in Dodgeball, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was, what's
the
her
German
name?
German person, was yeah. she not? Yeah. That falls in love with the guy from Grandma's Boy, who is the Neo ripoff.
Oh,
cannot remember
his fucking
name.
Justin Long?
No,
it's not Justin Long. Justin Long was the cheerleader. And he's also the doctor from
name.
What is the Idiocracy?
That's Justin Long.
Exactly, that's what he said.
No, this guy's like a Justin Long light.
Yeah,
we will think about this for a while.
I don't know his name because I don't think he was ever important enough to know his name. No offense to that actor, but like he was never starring in anything. He was always like support guy.
But he's also always enjoyable. No. So
he's
kudos to
fine.
You, guy.
He's
I really like him in
fine.
Grandma's Boy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anybody as that robot douchebag is going to be funny.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your favorite scene or story? If I can jump in and kind of
please do
and kind of take
lead
the reins.
This conversation
your favorite story that Albert Finney's character tells, or Ewan McGregor for that matter.
Do you have yours ready to go? Because I might need
to think. It's easily meeting the wife at the college and all of that, and then getting beat up and promising that he won't fight Roy from The Office, and
that's what he's for. I could not.
Remember it's
what
totally Roy, man.
Yeah.
That poor guy is always losing his girl to the charming, weird guy. So
poor guy.
Poor dude. Except for an out cold when he's the gay bartender.
Good for him.
But so, yeah, that would be mine. All of the telling of meeting his mother. Like, so, I mean, I guess that kind of encompasses all of the circus scene, too, because it's when he first sees her and then he works for 3 years. By the way, did you notice 3 years is the common theme in all of this movie?
I did. I was going to bring that up.
So when he grew up, he was...
Please, let's talk about that. I never noticed that.
So when he's bedridden, it's for 3 years. Mm-hmm. When he works at the circus, it's for 3 years. When he's drafted into the army, it's for a three-year stint, but he tries to work it down to get home as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I think it shows up one more time, too.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when, but that number is a recurring number.
Yeah, 3 years.
The significance of it, no fucking idea, but... No.
Oh, I think he traveled as a salesman for 3 years, too.
Okay, there you go.
I think that's the one.
I think that this Andre champagne is really good. I've never had it before.
Have you never had it?
I've never had it. Thank you, Andre. I just wanted to say that real quick.
Alex also brought us another bottle of Andre,
too. Awesome.
So thank you, Alex.
Extra dry. Extra dry.
We are drinking responsibly is what we're doing.
Yes,
we're
we are.
Not getting fucked up.
I know a lot of people in Bloomington I could spend the night at.
All right.
Try to find one of those ladies, though. You know who's with me? What? I just clapped my own hand. Ryan, do you mind if I go next?
Yeah.
I think my favorite story that the dad tells is Spectre. And I think that the reason I like Spectre is because when he's walking there, he says these very interesting things. And I don't mean to be like a dad in this situation since I have no kids.
Oh, okay.
But like... Stuff that is worth getting is hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, jumping spiders, that kind of shit. And when she takes his shoes and she's like, how are you going to leave now? You got no shoes. And he's like, I suspect it's going to hurt a lot.
Yeah.
You know, when he's Inspector, there's these great, like these little one-liners that you could fucking live off of. like if you just put your head down and listen to them, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a reason. That's my favorite is Spectre.
There's a great note in the Spectre scenes with Steve Buscemi's character, who's like this famous poet. That he knows
his and poetry is fucking on point.
This is the thing, and this is what I love, and they don't really touch on this or hit it on the head, but his poetry is really bad right there.
Yeah,
but he was a famous poet, so it makes me think, without hardship you can't create good art.
Exactly. He has no suffering, so he doesn't, he's just like,
yeah,
well, I forget the two lines before, but the last line in one of his poems is Spectre is really great.
It's like the grass is green, the sky is blue.
Spectre is really great.
That's
it.
That's how his poems end. And that's, I think it's again, Tim Burton's not usually subtle. That is a very subtle moment, yep, because they never stop and say like, huh, did you think that maybe your art is suffering because you have everything you want? You huck, huck. It's because Tim Burton does that,
yeah,
quite frequently, and he does it in this movie.
I think that's the reason I didn't think it was a Tim Burton movie, is it's so much more colorful than anything I've ever seen him do.
Yeah, it is nothing like a Tim Burton movie. It is so outside of that wheelhouse and those, mm-hmm, those things that you recognize Tim Burton for. That
he probably still has a sunburn from shooting that movie. Like he probably it probably affected him negatively
for being out in the sunlight for
decades. Like, and I get it. Like, it's okay. But, yeah, like, I want to see more shit like this coming through Hollywood right now. I'm so tired of this reboot mentality. Yeah. Like, I want to see, like, let's create books that are, like, good books and make them into movies, you know? Like this proves what Hollywood can do if you give it a good screenplay, mm-hmm, that's adapted well.
Well,
they're out there. They're just not getting the money or the attention. Well, that's the sad thing.
I think, you know, Tim Burton, when he comes to somebody and he says, I want to do this, people are going to be like, all right. I mean, you're mm-hmm, you're known, so let's do it. You guys want a little mind breaker, a little mind blowing knowledge?
I like my mind being blown.
So when they go as children to see the witch the first time, the little girl with them, do you know who that little girl is?
Miley Cyrus.
Oh my God! Yep, I did not Miley fucking Cyrus. Know that till I was watching. I was like,
last night.
Who is that? Holy shit, that is Miley Cyrus. That's exactly, what the fuck?
I looked at my dad. I go, is that Miley Cyrus? Because it's my dad and I's favorite movie.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, we just watch it and cry. And yeah, we have a great relationship. It's not like we're like...
Okay, so you have nothing like this movie?
Nothing like this movie.
Here's the thing. It would only be like that if you were a total dick, because the dad loves the son in this movie. It's the son that's an asshole about it.
No.
You don't
care. Yeah, no. Fair. Okay, all right, so...
explain it to me.
So the reason I say that, and watching it last night, there's a scene where he's like, Dad, we need to talk. And I did not see this. I thought this the whole time, that the dad was a sweetheart and he wasn't boring and he wasn't, you know. And for the first time last night watching it, when he goes, Dad, can we talk? He goes, well, of course we can talk. And everybody leaves the room. He goes, Dad, do you know about icebergs? So it's like, yeah, I know about icebergs. And he goes into this fucking giant tangent about you bring the ice. They brought the iceberg down to Texas and there's an elephant in it, the woolly type.
Yeah.
And he's just like, Dad, I don't want a story. And he's like, well, then don't ask a question. Mm-hmm. And then like that whole scene, the dad keeps like trying to elaborate on these fucking exhausting stories. And I think that's a beautiful, well done mm-hmm. thing that Tim Burton does in that scene, and Albert Finney, that they show how exhausting that is when you're trying to have that serious conversation and someone's just like wanting to do dick jokes the whole time. You're like, mm-hmm. no. Can we fucking talk for 2 seconds?
That is the basis of this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, it's all about the dad. It is. He's always on. He never stops. I completely sympathize with the son. Like, there are times when he is maybe a little bit too cold and harsh, mm-hmm. for sure. Don't disagree with that. But as somebody whose dad, who is now, he's been on the podcast.
Yeah.
He's fucking on, and he is almost always on. So, like, I can kind of get that. Now, I don't have this strained relationship with my father like they do in the movie, but, like, I get it. Like, I can see that. Like, it's not – I don't know.
It's not all rainbows and butterflies.
There are two problems with two characters. I don't think it's all solely on one person.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. Please elaborate.
I think I just did.
Is that what
my
it was?
Summation. Okay. Yeah, that was my wrap-up.
Well, because you had mentioned,
do you want me to
just
repeat my point?
That you had a couple of issues with the movie.
Oh, yeah. I can talk about that. But it's mostly just – it's like I said, it's the Tim Burton doing visuals for the sake of visuals. And like you can notice like a bunch of just dumb and silly things and then just – things that don't quite make sense in the service of visuals. Like when we get the Helena Bonham Carter talking about what the dad did, it starts out with like the great big storm, right? And he's driving and then the storm happens, mm-hmm. right? So then there's the car completely flooded underwater. And it's like, okay, I get it. You're kind of testing me here. And then he puts his hand to the window. It's like, okay, that's another shot. And then the very next scene, the car is in a tree. Why is the car in a tree? Because it fucking looks cool. That's
so just to say, the book actually talks about another story that was cut for the movie.
Okay, so you have read
I haven't the read book. The book, but my mom's read the book. There's and actually, that's the dog with the something. Remember when he's like, what story do you want me to tell you? This one or this one? He goes, I want you to tell me the story about the witch. There are more stories in the book that they couldn't get to. So okay. But knowing that, you never understand that shit.
He references the car in the tree earlier in the movie. He's like, mm-hmm. I've seen a Buick up in a tree.
Well, they reference it, but...
Exactly, yeah. But I know what you're saying.
It doesn't work.
I think it's just more of a bad cut. It's like, all of a sudden, dry and the water's gone. Here's the thing I do like.
Yes,
both times, you see that chick's butt.
You do. You do see the chick's butt quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
All right. Weird stylistic choices that Tim Burton does here I'm not cool with. The scene when he first meets the mom in the circus, love it. Up until a point. Like, when time freezes and he pushes the popcorn out of the way, like, that's such a good touch. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, and then time speeds up. And I fucking hate what he does with it visually. Like, I don't like that speed up thing. Danny DeVito scratching his face with his foot. Like, there's just these weird, dumb touches that are just like...
It's PG-13. It's for children.
Audience.
It's for the kids to giggle.
Fuck kids. They don't need to watch this movie.
It's like, PG-13, man.
Don't fucking play down to the masses. Like, don't make it like lowest common denominator. Like, fucking be proud of your Tim Burton's not afraid of like turning people away with his weirdness. So why are you gonna play down to the kids? Even last night
watching it, well, like the whole I forgot about Danny DeVito scratching his ear with his foot, and I was like, man, what a dumb scene. Thankfully, though, it's short, and it moves on.
I was okay with that scene. The scene that I had a problem with is in the circus. Carl actually teabags a dog, and that really upset me.
What?
Yeah, there's a scene where he's walking through, and he's, like, moving shit, and there's this dog that's jumping through the air. It is dick level to Carl, the giant.
Yeah.
And Carl has this shit-eating grin, and I don't know how long you want me to do this bit. This is not true.
Oh,
I was okay. God damn! Like,
where did this happen in the movie? I do.
I was gonna have it like Carl being like, but he's
would have bought it. I was like, I was
totally in. I was like, I guess I totally fucking missed this part.
Now, do you know out of the whole cast, the guy that played Carl the Giant is the only one that's dead?
I believe it because
he's gigantism.
He died in 2005.
We were talking about our favorite flashbacks, and mine is like the giant stuff. Like, I love the giant idea. Like, I don't know. I think the effects still work fantastically
Thank you. Yes.
They're so good. And I love that. Like, that's perfect Tim Burton whimsy. Like,
so perfected. Before I watched this movie last night, the last time I'd seen it was probably 8-ish years ago.
I was in college, so 6 or 7 years,
tripping my fucking balls off on mushrooms. I'd eaten an eighth of them, and we decided to watch this movie.
Of course you did.
And that part is one of the parts, like when he first meets him in the cave, and I remember being so fucking freaked out. Even though I've seen this movie before, at that time I was like, what the fuck is happening? Why is his voice so loud? It terrified me. But it's such a good, like, oh, man, I just love all that when he meets him and then he gets him all cleaned up and they work together.
So here's something I didn't know if you noticed. Do you feel that the dad is not telling stories as literal as his son is perceiving them? For instance, funeral scene. He sees the Siamese sisters for the first time.
Yeah.
He sees them as a Siamese twin in his mind's eye as conjoined sisters. But when he sees them in real life, they're not. When he sees Danny DeVito's character, he is talked about as being a good businessman and that he's very wolfish almost. Mm-hmm. And do you think that he had put that out there thinking – and he's not really a werewolf. He's just – Carl's not as tall as he is, but a lot of the stuff that he saw when he was at the funeral. Do you think that his dad wasn't telling the story as literal?
Yeah,
well, exactly. I think that's the thing.
I think a little bit, yeah. But there's also definitely exaggeration on his part because he does say some things that are absurd.
Being the big fish and telling the tall tale.
Yeah.
The details get bigger and more elaborate as he retells the story more and more times. So Carl, who is a pretty tall man, becomes a 12-foot giant after 30 retellings and things like that. And I think that's a nice touch at the end with the funeral scene, how you finally see these characters that you've heard about in their real life existence. And they're not this mythical thing, but they are still based in, you know, the Siamese twins aren't Siamese, but they're still twins. So
that is one of the funniest scenes when he walks into the room to get the plans in Shanghai.
I believe it's in Korea.
Korea,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the guys jump over the desk and they start doing.
Oh, I love that. A little sight gag.
And they
both
stop and he goes, just hold on 1 second. Pulls out the night spectacles and turns off the light.
That's so good.
Such a smart scene.
Yeah. And then you don't have to
casually racist, but sure.
I think
that these military Chinese, Taiwanese, Korean men, and all of them are speaking different languages. None of them are the same languages. Mm-hmm. Are gonna stop and just start doing kung fu. Like, you may as well add a gong noise in there. I like the smart of him, like turning off and using the night vision.
But I think that's the thing that even before 1990, like even before the 2000s, like that's a stereotype.
It was okay.
That everybody's like, Chinese people know how to fucking fight. You know, they know how to fight and they'll karate chop you in half.
Sure
and
will.
Like, it, wrong or not, like I think it being a 2005 movie. Like, I think it's a funny scene that plays up the ridiculousness of that thought process as well.
And it is, again, it is from Albert Finney's perspective, and it is over the top and exaggerated. So it's not as egregious as some of the things I have complained about.
I have a much bigger issue of him washing the fat guy in the tub than I do of anything else in the movie. I don't know if there's one scene that upsets me more than, and that guy, that actor probably got paid very well and he's not upset about it. He's probably lost a shit ton of weight.
Oh, I thought it was prosthesis. Yeah.
No, no way.
I think it's really a fat guy.
No,
I think it's a fat guy, but then they put even more on him.
I think that is way more fucking offensive.
Well, but at the time, you know, it's a fat man in a 30 sideshow circus.
I get it. But if we're going to talk about things that fucking offended us in this movie, that thing offended
me. Nothing offended me.
I think we can all agree fat lives matter. And
such a can of worms, this podcast.
I am not going to say anything.
Oh, my God. We're screwed.
All lives matter. It's fine.
Oh, God.
Don't say that one. That one's even worse.
Is it?
Oh, my God. We're fucked. We're going to get so much hate, man.
I'm really sorry.
Asian lives matter. Gay lives matter. All lives matter. It's
nerd
cool.
lives matter.
It's
there cool. we go.
Sorry that this was the episode that I was on. This is gosh.
So here we go. Let's bring this back. We all have previously admitted to this. Holy shit! I fucking cried like a baby.
Yeah,
a couple of times, especially at the end of this movie. And here's a thing that I haven't brought up on the podcast for a while because I haven't had to. But Mandy had never seen this movie before last night. Mandy fucking weeped. She cried like a baby and she loved this movie. She's like, I looked over and I'm crying. She's just fucking wiping her eyes at the end of this movie when the son finally gets it and he starts telling the tale of how his father dies. It's such a sweet
when he keeps going, and then what happened?
Yeah.
I was just God damn.
It's all good and I can maintain my composure until Jessica Lange is in the water and That's when I lose it.
No. Oh. It was, dude, all of it, I just fucking weep. And it's a good cry. Like, it's not like, ooh, it's like.
It's a hard cry. Holy shit.
It's so happy. Like, where the hell are you, Tim Burton? Bring more of this shit. This is such a great movie. It gives you so many emotional reactions, man. It's such good, like, you know, call me a fucking douchebag. It's good fucking art, man. It gives you such an emotional response.
See, I start crying from the moment when he wakes up and he looks over and his dad's got his eyes open.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there and he looks anguished with his mouth cocked open. And he's just like, ugh. He's like, do you want water? And he's just like, no. He pushes it away. With your dad, all he does is drink fucking water. Like, the whole movie is he's a water drinker. He always dries out. Which is another part of the movie where I tear up is when he's laying in the water and Jessica Lange comes in.
Yeah.
Oh, and she's like, I don't think I'm ever going to dry out.
It's a very, very beautiful, sweet scene.
Beautiful scene.
This movie made me fall in love with Jessica Lange before I knew who she was. Man, she is fantastic, stunning
actress
in this movie. Like, as you know, it's, maybe it's a double key click because she's also a redhead in this film. My God, man. I didn't even know who Jessica Lange was.
I won't take any offense to that.
Yeah. I got a big thing for redheads, buddy. I don't know if you know this.
I didn't.
But, man, she's fucking on point and just so lovely and so matriarchal and, like, I don't know, man.
Impatient with everybody.
Yeah.
She's so – when she's standing in the shed and she goes, oh, I didn't think I'd ever see this again. He's like, what is it? And she's like, this is the letter from when your dad
disappeared
and was, you know. He goes, oh, that really happened? And she was like, not everything your dad says the story.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? Anyway, back to what I said. When he's sitting there and then it starts. He builds this. And if you notice in the beginning, it's a very childish story.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a good story. Mm-hmm. It's not even elaborate. But he builds and builds. And then Carl shows up and knocks a car out of the way.
Great, yeah.
And then, you know, before that, they stop. They're like, stall us, which the elevator doors were already closed. There was no reason to do that to the orderlies, except if you hated orderlies. But, like, the elevator doors closed there. He was like, stall them, and they smacked them down. And then when they're going and they're driving, and he says, you know, we didn't take this street because of the church traffic, because they drive too fucking slow. And he's going through all this stuff, and he goes, I'm water. And he hands him the water, and he opens it up, but he doesn't drink it.
He just pours it all over
himself. It's such a beautiful – it's the story. It's how the movie is supposed to end. You're supposed to take this journey, and then at the end, you know, when everything's done, he turns into a big fish, and everybody's crying. He was just like, just how I remember, or just how I was told, or whatever it was. And that's it. And Albert Finney plays a death face like a motherfucker.
When he does die in the bed?
When he dies in the bed, I was like, he fucking died.
I was thinking, I was like, man, thank God that wasn't some elaborate, like,
no.
Yeah.
When he did the, like, death and then, like, the body relaxed.
Go out of the eyes.
Yes. Yeah. And the eyes come, they glaze over, and you're just like, this motherfucker just died.
Yeah.
What, like, you don't know is he actually did die on that film.
They brought him back. They were ready with the defibrillators.
You know the doctor that was in that movie?
Yeah, Benson.
Benson. He's actually 88 right now.
What?
No still shit. Alive, 88. Albert Finney, 80.
Huh. Damn.
They're both. Oh, they're all alive. The Giant's dead.
Yeah.
Well, now, we kind of. Yeah. It's Andre the Giant did the same thing. They don't particularly live a big life. You die soon. Yeah.
That's the way.
Oh, that's sweet.
I tell you what. If my last movie was going to be something, I'd want it to be Big Fish.
Yeah.
Now, I've got two questions.
Okay.
Really, one question and a statement. So I'll go with the question first.
Okay.
Speaking of the doctor. He says something, he tells the actual events of what happened on the day he was born and kind of how just ordinary it was. And he says, now, don't you prefer it doesn't make a very fun story, does it? It's not very entertaining, is it? Is that Tim Burton's thesis here? Is it larger than life, over-exaggerated everything, is better than the subtle and realistic and true?
Oh.
Do you think that's what Tim Burton's getting at?
I think the whole third act of the movie, there are still stories. Obviously, the dad's bedridden by having a stroke or a seizure. I can't remember which
stroke.
One.
Stroke,
or the other.
Yeah.
Excuse me one second.
You're okay.
I think that the stories do not dissipate in the third act. They just become storytellings by other people.
Mm-hmm.
Not elaborate.
They become more based in a reality.
Yes.
Like
Helena Bonham Carter's character, the doctor's character, they all still tell stories. And I think that's what I think it's an answer, it's a question for Billy Crudup's character, you know, would you rather have this larger than life portrayal? And he talks about being a footnote in the majority of his stories, but would you rather have this larger than life beautiful story that's been thought out and retold and retold, or would you rather have it something bland? I think Tim Burton's bland as shit. So I mean, I don't think it's something he's doing intentionally. I just think we're trying to get the main character to make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it works definitely from the character's perspective, and then like him turning into the big fish at the end and becoming a legend, like it all makes sense.
I think
sense.
I see what you're saying, Ryan, is it a more statement like, of Burton's total career as a whole?
Movie maker, yeah. Because like me myself, like I don't know, if I'm going to a movie, I usually like the kind of subtle, subdued, like the understated movies.
We're both fan of the slow burn, yeah, as we call them.
Yeah, like perfect example, we just saw Arrival this weekend. Really loved it.
I fucking loved every second of
it. Tim Burton made an alien invasion movie, Mars Attacks.
And it's so fucking over the top.
Ridiculous and all that.
And it's okay. It's fun. But I would, given the chance, I'd rather watch Arrival again.
That's what I'm saying. And I think Tim Burton, it's not what the movie's about.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Just an interesting statement that I think could be applied to Tim Burton's career as a whole.
So what speaking of statement, what is your statement?
My statement is this movie is Forrest Gump.
Okay.
But with big ideas.
Yeah.
Like that. I could not like tear myself away from the parallels, cuz it is like from start to finish like the story of a child growing up. His stories going through life. He joins the war. He does all these beat for beat.
But Albert Finney didn't get AIDS.
No, he had a stroke and cancer. But like, it's that same sad, sour ending on like a very fun. I see what you did. I'm gonna roll right over it.
Push it. Push over it.
But I tell you, this movie left me happier than Forrest Gump does.
Oh yeah,
Forrest
this is Gump, hopeful. Forrest Gump is not very hopeful.
It's very downward at the end, but this, yeah, it you just feel fucking happy, even though you're crying and you've been weeping for the last 10 minutes. You're like, God damn it, that was fucking good.
Yeah,
because you got to see them mend that bridge.
Yeah,
they both got what they wanted. Yeah. He got to see his dad how he wanted to see his dad, because in the last couple of days, people had told him what his dad actually was. And I think that was one of the more beautiful scenes with Helena Bonham Carter was when he was like, did you and my dad have an affair? And she's like, oh, we're going to dance around this bullshit for the last hour.
Yeah.
And she's like, and no, then of she's like, not. Of course we didn't. Your dad, there's only one woman.
That your
mom
ever
and every other woman. And that's a great line. That is such a beautiful like portrayal of, I mean the socio-whatever marriage of just the globe right now of commitment and staying – you know, commit it to your partner. It's a beautiful scene. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's the thing is he, by those people telling him what the story actually was, he got what he wanted and his dad got what he wanted because his dad got to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, he finally convinced his son to tell the story, to live life outside of the black and white that it is.
And then his son's telling the story at the very end. Yeah, he goes, he was 30 feet tall, right, Dad? And he's like, sure, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's just like it continues on.
More or less.
Yeah, it continues on. And like he's not stifling the creativity. Yeah. He's actually encouraging it as his child continues. And his dad didn't tell him the story.
Mm-hmm.
He told him. Billy Crudup's character told him the story.
I think so, even though there's a tragic ending, it is also a very happy ending.
Yes, exactly. As opposed to
Forrest Gump, which it ends and it's like, how long until Child Protective Services come in because he is unfit to raise a kid by himself?
Because the child has AIDS?
Like $1 billion.
Yes. Did you know that?
Does he have AIDS?
Haley Joel Osment has AIDs.
In real life.
He's been dead the whole time.
In real life.
Does he see the dead people that he is?
That's why he's so fat
now,
because the AIDS.
Have you seen Comedy Bang Bang with him on it?
Yeah. He's also in that terrible fucking movie with Justin Long, Tusk.
Oh, I heard Tusk
was
bad.
You said terrible fuck. I feel like I said it was a terrible movie, and like you were like, it's not that bad.
I watched it.
It's entertaining. I liked it.
I didn't say I liked
it. I heard Kevin Smith talk about it, and I want to give it a chance.
You should watch it. Maybe we'll have you back after you watch it. How about that?
I think
the Tusk episode will be out.
The podcast where they come up with Tusk is fantastic.
Yes, that's a great episode.
The movie, not so much.
But Johnny Depp's in it. Yeah.
All right, he is.
Johnny Depp's been in a bunch of shit, and
so exactly.
Let me tell you, fucking.
I got to wrap this up, man. We got to conclude here.
I know, that's fine.
So, in conclusion,
Johnny Depp hate episode coming soon.
Is this, in your opinion, how would you rank this in Burton's overall catalog?
One or two?
One or two?
Yeah,
Alex.
Easily one.
I think for me, it's also one. It is Tim Burton's, but like again, it's. It's so far above everything else he does. And I will fully admit, I'm a Tim Burton fan. I love a lot of the shit that he does, but this movie is so far above everything.
And I know you hate on it, and that's fine.
I grew up as a weird little fucking douchey kind of emo kid with emo kid girlfriends, and we all loved Nightmare Before Christmas and all that bullshit. Exactly. Jerk off hand motion.
Yeah.
For true. I am not debating that. For true. I am totally accepting that. But this movie is so much fucking better than every other Tim Burton thing.
Can I jump in really quick? I thought watching this movie last night, it would have lost some of what I thought made it so great. I really thought that watching it last night, I was going to go, it didn't hold up. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. I walked away from it loving it more. It had dropped good. To number excellent. 2 on my list of all-time favorite movies. And I think it's easily back to number 1.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Like, everything about it is everything I want
to
be.
Well, after this episode, I'd like to hear what the rest of the top 5 is. But
yeah.
I think at this point, we're going to have to stop here because we've got other things to move on to and other things to discuss in the near future. Alex, I think we're going to have you back for sure. You've been a fantastic guest. You hold your own. You know microphone etiquette, which a lot of these other dipshit guests don't know.
Are you talking about Brooks?
Brooks is good. Casey, I don't know.
Yeah,
Casey.
Don't insult the guy who is bigger than you. That's first thing you learn.
Is Brooks bigger?
Oh, Brooks God. Is way bigger.
He's a hulk of a man.
You he haven't seen it.
Break me.
We did a special episode. This is a teaser because we have to get it done. We did a whole wrestling episode
like a
with
buffet
Brooks.
Episode?
No, Brooks. Oh, my God.
Can we do a buffet episode?
We should.
Mr. Hibachi's really close. It's tasty.
Well, I would totally do it. Let's just set up and eat buffet and talk about it.
Yes.
Are Andrew's into that? All right. That is a future episode.
Mr. Hibachi, they just scream at you. Just give you a heads up. Yeah. And they hover your table.
But no, it's good. Alex, man, thank you so fucking much
thank
for
you.
Coming
it was
down,
awesome.
Man. You know, you've been a fan and a supporter of the show since its inception. Hans Zimmer plug. Thank you. Thank you. But thank you, man. It's fucking great to see you, and I hope you come back again really soon, and we'll get you back on, man, anytime.
Definitely.
You're more than welcome on the show.
I will say it's easy to be a fan when you guys put out a really good product. It's fun to listen to.
Damn,
I really enjoy
that
this show.
Likes the show. Yeah,
I do not understand
only,
that.
The only bad part about having you on the show is that now, next week, we'll only have 2 listeners instead of 3. Zing about ourselves. No. Thank you, Alex. You are the best, man. I can't wait to tell people the story of our bonding moment in maybe a future episode.
Next episode, yeah.
Spoiler. But on that note, that's the end, everybody. Go fuck yourselves. Grind out. Pee break, everybody.
Hi, this is Ryan, and if you liked what you just saw or listened to, please check us out at experiencegrind.com. Find us on facebook.com/experiencegrind, at Twitter, over at twitter.com/expgrindpodcast, where Kyle's tweeting out a lot of stuff all the time. And then you can always find us, our podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher, Twitch, or even on YouTube. Find us, just search Experience Grind Podcast. We don't have a channel yet. Stuff super easy to find. But please subscribe. We'll get there to you, make it even easier. And as always, if you like what you saw, we cover mini games and episodes every week. There's sure to be something you love. And as always, grind out.